welcome to the Butts in the Seats podcast, episode number 150.
Woohoo! Yeah, 150!
150 fucking episodes.
That's too many. Even Otto's excited.
Today we're here to review Fall Brawl 1998, the pay-per-view right before our first episode.
Yeah, so 150 episodes later, we're going back to episode negative one, essentially.
Emily's unaware that Back in Time by Huey Lewis in the News is playing right now.
Okay, that makes sense.
And since we're going back in time, you know, we don't want to have the future shows influence how we feel about this show. Or, you know, give us any spoilers.
We don't want to remember or jumble our memory.
Yeah, I'm sure you remember all that, too.
Totally. All of it.
So Emily's idea was for us to do Mind Erasers, because this is a 10 episode, so...
So we have to do a shot, and this is definitely the biggest shot we've ever done. And yes, this was my choice. I regret it. A Mind Eraser is a layered drink that is coffee liqueur, vodka, and soda. And you drink it very quickly through a straw.
All right, let's...
I am not excited for this. I don't think I'm going to be able to do it in one.
It's 6 ounces of liquid.
This is so much. I have trouble with a regular shot. Cheers, babe. Happy 150. Cheers. This is going to be so bad.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh.
God, that was a choice.
Yeah. Choices were made.
Oh, I regret that. Oh, I regret that so bad. Don't do that drink. Don't drink that.
I was going to do something fun.
Oh, that was so bad.
Oh,
who are you?
What? Where am I?
Oh, no. I erased too much of my mind.
Technically, if we're doing a mind eraser, we should be very confused at the dog.
There's a dog in here?
We did not have Otto in episode one.
Oh my God, that was so bad. I'm proud of myself for finishing it, but God, that was so bad. I'm gonna take my chaser real quick.
I see some
no,
left.
No, you don't.
I see some left.
It's residue, fuck off. Oh my God, I really regret everything.
Yeah,
that was
I think
so bad.
I was looking at fun stuff and you're like, what if we did this?
I wanted something on theme. Oh okay.
Yeah, Fall Brawl.
It's over, moving forward.
Emily, contrary to the mind eraser, how much do you remember about, like, the state of WCW from our first episode and early episodes?
So, very little in all honesty, but, like, this did kind of jog some of
like
my memories.
It's been, 5 years, so.
Yeah. I remember you pitching the show to me as, like, this is fucking terrible. And I guess my barometer has changed. Because this show actually has storylines.
It does.
It does.
It does, and it doesn't.
But it also has, like, fleshed out characters and wrestlers who are fucking trying. So this really isn't that bad of a show, all things considered.
Which is funny, because I was doing a little research on this show, and while there are plenty of ways to rate a pay-per-view, if you do purely Dave Meltzer average star ratings for matches, this show is the worst WCW pay-per-view since Hogan has come in. I didn't go further back than that.
Okay. I believe that. I mean, this isn't good.
Average star rating is 0.19.
Woof.
Yeah. So,
like, I'm saying it's not a bad show overall. Does it have low points? Yes. But, like, there is cohesion. And the thing is, like, this show does not feel like they conned you into watching a show. And that's kind of how Nitro has been feeling for us recently.
Yeah. And minus one moment, it moves along.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, all right, cool. We're doing a thing, and then we go on to the next thing. It's not, right. All right, we got to linger on this forever.
Right. But to, like, bring it back to, like, what did I know about WCW before this? Well, what did I know about the storylines before this? Going into Halloween Havoc, I knew that there was the NWO Black and White and the NWO Wolfpack, because you have told me that. I knew that Scott Hall and Kevin Nash were friends. I knew there was a story about them not being friends. And I knew Hogan was here. Warrior is here for some reason. That's kind of it. I really didn't know who DDP was because I only knew him from the Invasion. You kept being like, no, he's really good, I swear. Like, that's where I'm at. I know the guys from the Invasion, kind of, when we started the show.
Yeah.
I knew Chris Jericho.
You noting that Kevin Nash and Scott Hall are friends. I'm like, I'm waiting for the heated rivalry inspired fan fiction of Scott Hall and Kevin Nash.
I gotta go write something real quick.
Emily's been watching a lot of Heated Rivalry.
It's so good. It's so good. Like, aside from the sex, just, like, the general storytelling is so good. Episode 3 is a masterpiece, and I think that episode alone should win an Emmy. So good. Okay.
Should this show win an Emmy?
God, no.
Yeah, this show is Fall Brawl, 1998, live from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, on September 13th, 1998.
They didn't really say that in the show, do they?
I don't know who decides to say that and who doesn't. I've never been clear on who are the Kakalaki boys.
Valid. I feel like Jericho would say it, but like in sincerity, or he thinks like he's in North Kakalaki. Like, I don't know.
He's Canadian. I don't know.
I don't know.
This show did 275,000 buys, which is the lowest of the year so far. 2 months ago, Bash of the Beach did 580,000.
Okay. God with, damn.
I'm forgetting if Road Wild or Bash of the Beach is the one that has Jay Leno in the main event. I think it's Road Wild.
That mind eraser hit really quick, didn't it?
We didn't watch these shows.
But still, you... pre-shot, your encyclopedic brain would know.
Suddenly, before we get into this show, I have a litany of backstage notes just to get us a little more acquainted with this time, because it is very much a strange point in time we're going to with the other things we have going on, considering we're in late 2000 over here on the main timeline, and we are now in 1997 on the Patreon. Mm-hmm. So I just want to get you like calibrated for where we're at.
Please do, because there were a couple points in the show where I'm like, wait, who's with who? Mad at who?
Yeah, everything here has happened in about the last month.
Okay.
Last month's pay-per-view, Road Wild, is resulting in some refunds because apparently the main event of the show was supposed to be a Travis Tritt concert.
Try again? What?
Travis Tritt.
Who the hell is Travis Tritt?
Some country star, I don't know. But apparently not every pay-per-view provider had that portion. So people are going like, all right, well, you didn't give us the full show as advertised, so I want a refund. It also just so happens that pay-per-view is terrible. So some people may have been using that as a way to like, you know,
get
fuck
their
that
money
show.
Back for a bad show. Yeah, that's valid.
Travis Tritt also held them up and wouldn't go out unless they paid him in advance. He also wanted like a private Learjet flight home and 3 motorcycles.
Jeez.
In a timeless note, Rey Mysterio has injured his knee. And apparently, 21 wrestlers in WCW are currently hurt.
21?
Yes.
Oh my god.
And not all of them are out. They're just hurt.
Oh, that's worse. If you're hurt, be hurt.
WWF has recently bid on a restaurant location in Times Square in New York City with the plan to open some sort of WWF-themed restaurant.
Let's fucking go. The Nitro Grill. Pasta Mania, brother. I know that's not the Nitro Grill, but still.
The Warrior showed up in WCW, and his intro promo was supposed to go 6 minutes. He went for 18.
Jesus. Wait, before you move on to the next note, I have a question for you.
Okay.
You know how my hypothetical, if I were to go back in time thing, is I would go to an ECW show?
I do. Mine is not to go to WWF New York.
No. I'm saying, is there a timeline where I could go to an ECW show in, like, I don't know, the Hammerstein Ballroom, and then go to the WWF or Nitro Grill after the show?
Where we're at in the timeline, if you go to one of these last ECW shows that are in New York, yeah.
I don't know when these grills open / close.
I don't think they close until like, my gut's saying like 04, somewhere around there.
Okay.
Because eventually it becomes the world.
Okay, so I need to pick a date so when I get into my DeLorean, I can figure out exactly where I'm going, because I'm going to an ECW show at the Hammerstein Ballroom, and then I'm following up with dinner and drinks at Pasta Mania, brother.
All right, well, Pasta Mania, that's a whole different world.
Well, all of it.
I don't know when Pasta Mania would have
appetizers at the Nitro Grill, entree at the WWF Grill, and then dessert at Pasta Mania.
So you're going from Vegas to New York to Minnesota.
I have a DeLorean. I can do anything.
No, that's not how that works.
Time zones, brother.
No.
I can go back in time multiple times.
But I'm saying you can't teleport. You have to drive each time. The DeLorean does not teleport to a different location. It only goes back in time.
Fuck, you're right. TARDIS. I have a TARDIS. So when I get my TARDIS, I'm going to plug in these coordinates.
Anyway, Lex Luger's contract was renewed for 3 years. So that brings him through September of 2001.
Oh, no.
Didn't hear it until I said it.
No.
I more meant like, oh, that's during the invasion. Shane McMahon was recently named president of new media for the company, sure, which basically means he's overseeing the WWF website.
Oh, no.
And Vince's 22-year-old daughter, Stephanie McMahon, is in a management training program and will start officially working backstage for WWF soon. No word on when she invents women.
Interesting. Probably give it a couple years.
1996 Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle will be at a WWF training camp this week. Shawn Michaels is still expected to return eventually, likely before the end of the year. Give it 4 more years.
If you say so. Oh, no.
New Jack had an operation on his testicles and will be out another month.
I don't think I knew that New Jack had an operation on his testicles.
No, did I, but...
The more you know.
The whole Flair-Bischoff saga is coming to an end, and will actually kind of end tomorrow night because he returns on the following Nitro.
Fun.
Scott Hall just happened to be injured and miss a Nitro the day they were doing drug testing.
Oh, how convenient.
Sting signed a new 7-figure WWE contract and no longer wants to work Thursdays. I love getting a huge pay increase and then going, and I want to do less work.
Must be nice. Must be nice to have that like negotiating ability.
This next one is a long story, but it's worth it, and it really just like shows you that WWE never knew what the fuck they were doing.
Yeah.
I'm reading directly from the write-up of the Wrestling Observer Rewind on Reddit. Goldberg missed a house show in Terre Haute, Indiana recently, and because it's WCW, the whole thing was, of course, a total clusterfuck. Goldberg had asked for those 2 days off a long time ago, and J.J. Dillon agreed and gave him the time off. But because no one in WCW communicates with anyone else, somehow word never got around to the promotions department, and they continued to advertise Goldberg versus the Giant for the show. No one realized there was a problem until the day of the show when they got there and realized Goldberg wasn't there and the Goldberg Giant match was the only one they had advertised. A week earlier, Goldberg had missed the show because WCW double booked him in 2 different cities and he couldn't get to the show in time, so they ended up offering refunds to the fans, which cost them a shit ton of money. So in this case, instead of offering refunds, they decided to not tell the fans at all. Instead, they had all the cars backstage warmed up and ready to go as soon as the last match finished.
Oh no.
Everybody got the fuck out of Terre Haute before the fans could realize they were getting screwed. They had a show scheduled the next night in Peoria, and realizing they were going to have the same problem, they called and begged Goldberg to come work the show. Since he had asked for time off, he wasn't happy about it, but he eventually agreed. WCW spent $11,000 to charter a jet to get him to Peoria for the show.
Jesus Christ.
So it's going great.
Sounds like it.
Nitro is being written these days by Eric Bischoff, former child star Jason Hervey, Hulk Hogan, and Kevin Nash.
Of course. Wow, what the fuck?
Scott Steiner has 5 compressed discs in his back, which is part of the reason for a match later.
That makes sense.
Just to show how big wrestling is in 1998... The St. Louis Cardinals, who in this year have Mark McGwire, who is going for the single-season home run record, they play the Atlanta Braves on TBS. The game drew the Braves' highest rating of the season, which was a 2.6, which is about half of what Nitro and Raw are getting at this time.
Jesus.
Laparca was supposed to be out injured with a torn ACL, but he worked a show in Mexico recently, assuming WWE wouldn't find out. They did, and now he's suspended. Whoops.
He's suspended?
Yeah.
I mean, this is what I mean with the, like... 21 of you are injured. Like, when you're fucking hurt, be hurt.
I don't think he was hurt, though.
You said he tore his ACL.
Well, supposedly.
Oh, I didn't catch the supposedly part. And oh, you big dummy chairman.
Chris Benoit is still out injured, but was told to fly to Nitro anyway because they still wanted him to appear. So he packed his bags and flew out there, only to find that they decided at the last minute not to put him on the show after all. But that is all for the backstage notes. Yeah, I just want to get you fully caught up on, like, what the fuck's going on in wrestling, and mostly WCW. I mean, over on WWF, they just did SummerSlam 98, which is, like, one of the highest grossing shows they've done in a long time.
Okay, so we're deep in the pits of, like, Raw is killing it, or yeah, WWF is killing
it. Yes, no matter who you ask at this time, this is the Attitude Era.
Okay.
Depending on who you ask and when, sometimes the Attitude Era is just a year, and it ends at WrestleMania 15.
Okay.
Sometimes it goes longer, sometimes it goes shorter. But, like, summer of 98 is 100%.
100%, it's in that range.
Yes.
Okay, noted. We are fully in the wars, right?
Yes.
The Monday Night Wars. There's no question about, like, this is the wars.
That starts in 95.
The 83 weeks start in 95?
No. The 83 weeks.
Okay, I think of the war as truly like when they're back and forth on like who's winning the ratings.
Well, so then by your definition, the 83 weeks would not be part of the war.
I guess that's fair. What I just said isn't correct. You're right.
Yeah.
But no. I'm thinking like when they were actually neck and neck and then when WCW started to win and then like that, that's the war.
No, they do be out here necking.
Oh, they be necking. In 98, they're necking?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, 98 is the, I guess, main year of them going more back and forth because it's somewhere in early 98, which is when the 83 weeks ends, which means it would have been all 97 that WCW won.
Okay.
But with all that covered, let's get into our main show of Fall Brawl 1998.
Let's do it.
We get an opening package highlighting main event Stevie Ray. The main event of this show is a technically three-team War Games match, but whoever wins the match gets a title shot, so it's effectively no teams.
Yeah, and it really did start to feel like that during the match, too. Spoilers, we'll get there. But.
Yeah, well, in the build-up to this, Roddy Piper's the only one of everybody who came out and went, there's no fucking teams. Why are we pretending there's teams?
Yeah, he immediately was like, fuck that.
I did actually find the pre-show for this. There was not much of note, minus the fact that like you could kind of tell what matches were actually advertised and which ones really weren't, or a couple of these were just made on like the last Thunder before this show.
I believe that.
So this is a very poorly advertised show.
And what did you say the buy rate for it was? 250?
275.
275, okay.
Which is
down from 2 months ago, but like still not awful.
What's that, like five times what we're doing in
that's current? The bar, okay? I need another mind eraser because I'm remembering.
2 years from now?
Fuck you. Really? Oh my god.
Yeah. We're 98.
Oh my god. It's only 2 years. We're 5 years took us 2 years. Like my brain doesn't understand timelines.
Emily, we're like effectively as far from Starcade 96 as we are to Starcade 2000. Like it's almost the same distance. This is the midpoint.
This is why we did the podcast. Because it's in reality, it's not a slow downfall. Let's be genuine with ourselves. We say that the crux of this podcast is it is a slow but inevitable downfall of WCW through the late 90s and early 2000s. It's not slow. It took us 5 years to get there, but holy shit, it only took 2 years for them. Wow. Yeah. Jesus Christ. Sorry. I have those moments every once in a while where I'm like, oh my God, it hasn't been that long. Sorry, we can move forward now.
We then get the opening pyro with Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Mike Tenay on commentary. I was happy for no Dusty.
Yeah.
Tony goes over the new rules of War Games, and we hear massive We Want Flair chants. I'm
immediately.
Like, we're so close. You're a day away, guys.
Oh, does he come back tomorrow night?
Yes.
Damn. Where are they tomorrow? Are they still in North Carolina?
I think they're in South. They're in Greenville, like in South Carolina.
South Carolina, yeah.
That's a great segment, though.
Is it?
I actually went and like rewatched that because it's like it's one of those like all-time classic Nitro moments.
I don't think we ever watched it together.
But going back, speaking of the new rules to War Games, effectively the main event War Games match could end in 10 seconds.
Yes. They keep harping on that. Like, yeah, it's a 9-man match, but the match could be over before all 9 men enter.
Yeah, it's kind of wild that they go on and that doesn't happen, but we'll get to the whole main event at the main event.
Yes, because it is convoluted.
Speaking of convoluted, Tony then throws to backstage, but potentially earlier tonight?
Maybe?
They're like, oh, wait, something's going on backstage. And then we see earlier tonight. And I'm like, what? Oh. The cat is being held back by security. I didn't even see who else was here with him.
Who was the guy he was fighting?
Maybe Norman, because they have the match later, but
it didn't look like Norman.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't feel important enough to even hit the back 30 seconds.
I also noted that the cat is wearing shorts in this segment. I don't know. That just bothers me.
Commentary goes back to chatting about the main event, and then they throw to Mean Gene. Gene hypes up the card, and then Chris Jericho and his floof come out.
This is peak Jericho. This is peak floof. This is Jericho in his prime. I don't care what he says. This is prime Jericho.
Not undisputed champion. Actually, who's anyone kidding? That's like the worst Jericho.
This is peak Jericho. He looks so good. He's so charismatic. He's so funny. Like, he's got his character on lock.
Yeah. So he is in the middle of a one-sided feud with Goldberg because Goldberg, in kayfabe and shoot, wants nothing to do with Chris Jericho as part of this feud.
Yeah, you can kind of tell.
And they're letting him go out and do this. I don't know why. Like, Goldberg's actually, he's like, I don't want to work with you under any circumstance. Stop telling people we're feuding. We're not feuding.
Interesting. I kind of read it as, like, Jericho's just going to keep poking the bear until the bear pokes back.
Yeah. Well, as part of this, he's like, I have a scoop for tonight, Gene Mean.
Gene Mean? Oh, Gene Mean took me back.
Which might be a Iron Sheik reference.
Maybe. It might just be like a nod, like an homage.
Yeah, that's more what I mean. But his scoop tonight is that he has a match with Goldberg tonight, title versus title. Gene's like, I've not heard about this. Oh, I forgot I was going to make you drink an Okerlund for this, but maybe the mind erase is enough.
You know, we'll talk about it if we decide to take a break.
Jericho then claims he'll be WCW's first double champion, which I'm like, I didn't bother looking more into this to see how untrue it was, but when Goldberg won the world title, he was also U.S. champion.
They didn't really make a big deal of it, though.
Well, they had him vacate the title, that's why.
That's why. Yeah, because he wasn't a double champion.
For that night, he was. Mm. The shot of him winning the world title is him holding both belts.
Okay, valid. So, then yeah.
But let's go from that interview to our first match. It is, depending on when you ask, it's the Boogie Knights or the Dancing Fools or Dancing Idiots or something. Disco Inferno and Alex Wright versus the Hart Foundation of British Bulldog and Jim Neidhart.
Honestly, on paper, I think that I would be uninterested in this.
Yeah.
In the like the span of time since we've like, again, I'm trying to like not remember. If we opened the show 5 years ago and you put this on, I'd be like, I don't fucking care. It's Jim Neidhart. I don't care.
Please say it properly.
I don't care.
I don't care.
Okay,
about
maybe
Stephanie.
Because of that, I would care.
Yeah, this is 98 Bulldog. Mm. Looking rough to begin with. And like, say what you will about the jeans, but it like set the expectation properly.
It did. Yeah.
And then
I don't know.
And then Jim Neidhart, just a small touch that annoyed both of us. His pink does not match for his top and his pants.
Yeah, the shades are different. No, the Bulldog, like, in my mind, Bulldog has to have the braids and the calf tassels and the panties and just be oiled up. Okay. Like, that's Bulldog to me.
So early 90s Bulldog.
Yeah, this does not look like Bulldog, but it is. I don't know. It's the vibes, I will say, going into this are pretty immaculate. Like, Disco and Berlin know how to set the stage.
Alex Wright, please.
This
is apparently a bonus match, one of many on this show.
Where it's like a bonus match.
Yeah, basically, we didn't advertise it. We're just throwing it on.
Well, it sounds like you didn't advertise a lot.
I do find it weird they are not doing a proper Hart Foundation thing with Brett and them. It's like, you can't add two more guys to the fucking NWO.
Yeah, that is kind of surprising.
Like, Brett teamed against them on Thunder, apparently. It's like, what the fuck?
Is Hart Foundation trademarked, maybe?
I mean, maybe that exact verbiage, but you can team these guys together and not get sued.
Right.
Match starts with immediate stalling. Jim does not partake. We get USA chants with Wright and Bulldog in the ring, so you figure it out.
I think they were just being racist.
But I'm like, so this is heels versus heels.
I guess. I don't know, because the heel face dynamic is pretty lax, bro. It's hard to know. It's not strictly established.
Disco and Alex Wright are like the de facto faces in terms of working this match, but I'm like, yeah, I think this everybody here is a heel. Wright takes Bulldog down with an arm drag, and Davey complains that he pulled the hair. They trade strikes in the corner, and Bulldog hits a hip toss and a press slam. Neidhart and Disco tag in, Jim overpowers him. Like, they're still starting up, but these four don't seem to really have chemistry.
With each other, no. I think within the teams, they're good.
Yeah. Like, they have it with their partners. They don't seem to have it with their opponents.
I don't know how much that bothers me.
Disco hits a drop toe hold and a bunch of stomps, followed by a knee lift. Bulldog tags in, as does Wright again, who hits uppercuts. Mm. They were European uppercuts, but, you know.
That should just be known. I do miss Alex Wright. He's just got the right vibes.
He's still on the show, Emily.
No, he's not.
They go into the corner. Wright tries a monkey flip, but Bulldog stays upright with a cartwheel. Disco then comes in, hits a diving elbow, and then an atomic drop. Bulldog throws Disco over the top rope. No DQ, and no mention of it either. I'm like, okay.
So that rule has expired?
Yeah, I don't know when they get rid of that. I'm absolutely fine with it, but I was just like, it was not a talking point, so I'm like, all right, it's gone.
Good.
Also made me feel good that I'm like, I didn't forget that was still a thing in the early days of the podcast or something. Neidhart beats Disco down the outside, throws him into the guardrails. Neidhart and Wright come in illegally, I think just to draw attention away from Disco and Davey having a chat.
Maybe.
Bulldog hits a stun gun to the second rope, then tags in Neidhart. Jim gets him out unceremoniously and then bites Disco in the corner.
He bites him in like the eyeball.
The crowd gets a little bored here because we get loud, we want Flair chants.
Oh, I thought I heard We Want Brett.
I went back. It's We Want Flair.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I was having fun up to this point. This is a fun match.
Davey hits a scoop slam, but Disco dodges a vaulting shoulder tackle from Neidhart and tags in Wright. Wright hits a missile drop kick to Jim and then a regular drop kick to Davey, followed by a back body drop. And Davey takes the back body drop very weirdly.
Hmm.
And apparently Alex Wright has been interviewed about this in like recent years. This is the match that like really fucks up Davey's back. Like he has some sort of infection, which like kind of leads to an the painkiller problem gets worse. Like he was never really great with it to begin with.
Okay.
I mean, never forget the SummerSlam 92 match. He was completely high for it, forgot. And it's like where's Davey? Oh, he's smoking crack. Can you drive him? No, I'm smoking crack with him.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yes, I forgot about that. So does he land, like, is it just, because when you pointed out what you thought the move was, he doesn't land on his back, really? It looks like he lands on, like, his shoulder.
So Alex Wright noted that earlier in the match, he gets press slammed and lands on a trap door to be used in our main event tonight. So Wright bumps on it early in the match and goes, oh, fuck. When he drop kicks Davey, Davey takes a flat back bump right on it.
Oof.
So it's not the hip toss. I think it's the drop kick right before that he goes back for. Because the hip toss, yeah, he takes weird, but like he doesn't take it on the door. The door is in the center of the fucking ring.
Terrible.
Yeah. It's actually been kind of noted how many of the matches don't alternate. Like usually on these, they go, all right, one and the other, just give everybody equal show.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, they tip people off and go, hey, there's a bad spot. Because they weren't told about the trap door. Yeah.
There's no reason for the trapdoor to have been in the center, I don't think.
There's no reason for the trapdoor at all, but we'll get to that.
Valid. I'm just thinking of, like, the way the trapdoor comes into play, there's no reason for that to not have been, like, on the side.
Yeah, but, like, if you want to be a little too butterfly effect about it, that's the bump that kills Davey Boy Smith.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, let's get back to this match.
So cheerful, so happy, so fun. Jesus Christ.
Wright hits a scoop slam on Bulldog, who doesn't want to take it flat back, and you're like, yeah, he's fucked up here. Disco saves Wright from being hit with a running stampede, and the two hit a double clothesline. Bulldog sends Disco into Wright, and Bulldog has a rough time picking up Disco.
Mm.
He eventually gets him up, hits a running power slam, and pins Disco. So Team Not Heart Foundation win.
Team Not Heart Foundation. Yeah. It sounds like you're saying Neidhart Foundation.
Why not?
Team Neidhart Foundation.
I didn't think this was a great opener, but it wasn't bad. Like, I see people really not into this match, and I'm like, it's fine.
I was having fun with it.
Like it's unceremonious. Like, it feels like not the right choice to open this show, at least on paper, but I guess, well, then again, I don't know what the fuck you would pick.
Yeah,
maybe this is the best choice for it. But yeah, I mean, like, I think this is a totally serviceable match.
Yeah,
it's
entirely fine.
I'm going to forget about it tomorrow, but I don't think it's bad.
I would never say this is a bad match. C, maybe, but not bad. Like, totally passable, fun, entertaining, kind of gets the energy up enough, minus that weird little lag in the middle. Fine. No reason to be mad about it.
Yeah, this got a quarter of a star from Dave Meltzer.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, this is like a 1.5 or 2. Come on.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Let's go backstage. We get Mean Gene. He wants to talk to Scott Steiner and Buff Bagwell. Scott Steiner claims to be hurt, as is evident from the Band-Aid on his bicep.
Yes, he has a Band-Aid on the inside and on the outside of his bicep. So therefore, he is injured.
I love the phrase, inside his bicep, because it means under the skin he has put a Band-Aid.
The inner side of.
Buff Bagwell then explains they have a doctor's note from Dr. Cecil Schwartz.
Sure.
Yeah, a thing they were doing in the past couple weeks of just some weird dude, but Buff came out in a Rastafarian outfit in the last couple weeks, too.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. What a choice.
J.J. Dillon comes in, and he gets handed the note, and he's like, I'm sorry that you went through the trouble of making this fake-ass note. The match is on.
It was more 90s than that. It was, I'm sorry that you took the time to make a bogus document that isn't going to fly. This is charming. This is charming and funny, and this is a side of Scott Steiner that we never see.
I don't know about that.
We don't see this at least anymore. Like, I don't see the witty, trying to be clever, trying to be funny Scott. Not the character. You know what I mean?
God, I think it's probably early 99. Thinking of him and Buff doing the weird Keystone Cops thing.
Yeah.
So next up, we get Chris Jericho versus Goldberg. Totally Goldberg.
I mean, we don't know that it's not Goldberg yet. Like, it is Goldberg. Why wouldn't it be Goldberg? It says Goldberg on all of the websites.
Well, no, it doesn't, luckily, because this is a angle that was booked in real time as opposed to being advertised.
The website that you showed me, what was that?
Oh, Cage Match.
Yeah, Cage Match said Jericho versus Goldberg.
Weirdly, Goldberg did not have a link. Every other name was a hyperlink to their profile besides Goldberg's. I'm like, huh, interesting.
It's just because he didn't want to be, he didn't want to have any part of this match. That's all.
Yeah. As I was noting, luckily, this was not an advertised thing, meaning no one bought tickets to see this match.
I imagine some people bought tickets to see Goldberg, though.
He's on the poster. He's not here tonight.
It's weird.
But Jericho's music hits, and by Jericho's music, I mean Break the Walls Down.
Because he has one song. Yeah. Jericho gets one song. This is his song. If he comes back at the Rumble, which I'm still thinking he will, I think he comes out to this song.
Jericho's theme plays for a while before we go to backstage, and we see Ralphus and some other guy who fuck him.
Yeah, he is the Jericho-holic ninja.
I don't care.
Why?
Because they just needed a second guy.
Ralphus is the best. You don't need a second guy because they ditched the second guy pretty quickly.
Yeah. Jericho does the whole Goldberg entrance, including going the wrong way a few times, a lot of Spinal Tap.
Spinal Tap?
Yeah, the movie This Is Spinal Tap.
I'm aware of the movie. I don't know what you're referencing.
They have a similar bit during that where they can't find the stage.
Oh. Okay. I've never seen the movie. I know nothing about that.
But Jericho comes out. The pyro doesn't go off like he wants it. And then he gets in the ring and Goldberg's music hits and the crowd buys it.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
And the stage pyro goes and then it fades out. And it's just some lad.
It's Goldberg.
Not quite. This man looks fake in that, like, he has some meat on his bones, but he's so small.
What did you call him?
Goldberg light but heavy.
Yep. I love that.
Just a strange looking man. And the bell rings. We get almost immediate bullshit chants.
Well, I mean, yeah. It literally is bullshit.
Yeah. Jericho beats the guy down until Goldberg hits a spear. Jericho gets up, kicks Goldberg, locks in a lion tamer, and wins. It's like, you really, like, you need the real Goldberg to come out at the end of this and kill Jericho.
Yeah. It was missing that last little note.
But they saved that for just a weird, random Nitro segment. Like, that's the big payoff to this, is Jericho's doing an interview and gets speared.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
Weird.
Long term, the payoff is, in 2003, they feud, and Jericho was like, you didn't want to face me.
But there was some sort of, like, real backstage heat between these guys, right?
Somewhat. It was more some people, brother, got in Goldberg's ear and was like, he's too small. Why are you doing an angle with him?
That's just shitty.
Yeah.
That's just a shitty mentality to have.
But, I mean, we're talking about Kevin Nash in 2000 just doing whatever he wants. This isn't Jericho going into business for himself. It's, why are you letting Jericho keep doing this angle?
Right.
If you don't want to do it.
Right.
Admittedly, for this match, thank God it wasn't advertised. Like, so one saving grace for this is, as I said, no one paid real money for this match because you set it up on the show.
Specifically, sure. But they paid money for the show, and this is part of the show.
Yeah, it's an easy way to piss people off. Yeah. And I think it really does adversely affect the next few matches.
When they're leaving the ring, though, Jericho grabs the fake belt that was around Goldberg's waist and literally just rips it with his hands. That was kind of impressive. I'm not going to lie.
I just feel the need to note, and I know you know this, it is not Dwayne Gill. It's just some guy.
Oh, I know. But you can't say quote-unquote Goldberg every time you say Goldberg because you didn't. So it's Goldberg. Goldberg's an easy way to say that this is somebody impersonating Goldberg.
Let's move forward to a WCW.com check-in with Rick Steiner and some weird audio. Then we see earlier today, Mike Tenay interviewed the Armstrong brothers, and Ernest the Cat Miller comes to interrupt, and they're like, come on, man, we don't get that much TV time. He's like, I want more. And
this is just sad.
He, like, shittily beats them up until Norman Smiley kind of intervenes.
Norman to the rescue, I guess.
Yeah, and that's the setup for this match, which is also clearly unadvertised, which makes three in a row.
That's just weird. Before we go into the match, let's talk about this segment. Why was Gene talking to the Armstrongs in general? Or sorry, Mike Tenay.
Yeah.
Why were the Armstrongs there?
To get interrupted by the cat.
But them saying like, oh, we don't get TV time. Like, what were you going to have TV time for?
I don't know.
In kayfabe, what were they promoting?
Especially on pay-per-view.
Yeah. I had to be like, who is that?
My brother's got this gimmick over in WWF. It's going great.
Who's her brother?
Road Dogg.
Right, I forget.
Yeah, because one of these two goes on to become Buzzkill.
Oh, that name rings a bell.
The weird hippie Road Dogg knockoff.
Oh, with the sign?
Yeah.
Yes, yes,
this,
yes.
This did not last long.
No, but he was a hippie and he like walked back and forth in the audience for like a couple weeks with a sign or something.
Yeah, and he broke Berlin's winning streak for some fucking reason.
Oh, God. God, the journey we've been on.
Emily, that's not even 2 years away. That's like 1 year away from this.
The journey we've been on, brother.
Our next match, it's Ernest the Cat Miller versus Norman Smiley. And I feel like when we started the podcast, we had very similar opinions on these two men.
Yes.
And the journey we've been on with both of them, we're in the same place on one of them and a very different place with the other.
Yes. I love Norman Smiley now. We are both super team Norman Smiley. Now yeah. It's like, fuck off, Cat. Yeah. It was always fuck off, Cat.
Yeah.
Did you notice where Norman Smiley's billed from?
Oh, yeah. He's from like England.
We never knew that.
I think we may have noted this like once, but really? It's just not present in anything with his gimmick that I'm like, yeah.
He also just doesn't have an accent, like he masks it well. I never would have thought that he was English.
So the cat comes out, grabs a mic. Wow, he really hasn't changed.
Right.
He gives Norman 5 seconds to leave, and the crowd does not care. It also takes him like a minute and a half to get to this fucking five count. Smiley punches him at 5, and then hits a dropkick, sending the cat to the floor. The ref then stops Norman on the outside so Cat can hit a kick and throw Norman into the barricade. Like, that spot's always lame, but when you go out of the ring to do it, I'm like, come right. on.
Right.
Cat hits kicks in the ring and they go to the corner. Cat hits strikes and their timing's a bit off for a lot of this match.
It's awkward because the cat has never been and does not become a good in-ring wrestler. Sure, he's probably fine at karate or whatever. He's not a good wrestler.
Yeah, he's Garrett Bischoff's karate instructor.
Sure, if you say so. Like, he's not good. He's not good. That's why he needs the magic red shoes to make him charismatic or something.
Yeah, not seen tonight.
I know.
Norman hits a spinning back suplex and then a leg drop. The cat begs off but trips up Norman. More strikes are traded until Cat rest hold for a second. Norman hits a scoop slam and Cat doesn't quite bump right for it, but admittedly, they're in the bad ring,
yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's why.
Do you think there was somebody that went backstage that was like, hey?
Oh, yeah, I think Alex Wright.
Oh, okay.
I think he's actually confirmed he did.
Oh, good. Good on him.
Norman then hits a delayed suplex, and once again, the cat bumps kind of weird. The cat goes up top and then whiffs a top rope kick, which is meant to be like the feliner.
Mm.
And then they follow up with a sloppy, unnamed feliner for the flat win for the cat.
Yeah, he whiffs it, does a pretty underwhelming move, and still wins.
Yeah, I mean, it's the move he does now. It's just like,
it's
no one
good.
Cares.
Again, it's not good.
And then he grabs a mic and yells, I'm the greatest, and that's it. It's like, oh, nothing else? Like, oh, okay.
No, he's garbage.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times to say it. Like, this was a boring match. He's a boring person. I don't like it. Move on.
I wrote this was predictably disappointing.
Yeah. Like, it's nice to see Norman. We don't see a lot of him anymore, so it's kind of nice to go back to that well.
No Big Wiggle.
No Big Wiggle. Was this pre-Big Wiggle or post-Big Wiggle?
It might be, well, it'd be pre, if anything.
Oh, I guess that's true. Everything is pre here.
Yeah, your timelines are all jumbled.
We've added a fourth fucking timeline to our lives. This is cruel and unusual.
It's for one episode.
I know, but still. I had to like have a conversation with Nick before we sat down to record this where I was like, listen, you're adding a new timeline. If I ask you for clarity on what's happening, help.
We're doing this before we record TNA Genesis 2007 for the Patreon, and I'm wondering how much your TNA is going to be off.
Probably all of it.
I'm fine if it's all the way off in terms of like just complete reset. It's if you're associating things with
it's so
2010.
Possible because it's similar people.
Yeah.
Like, it's this is going to be so hard.
Let's move on. We got our next match. It is brother versus brother. Brother. It is Scott Steiner with Buff Bagwell versus Rick Steiner. And we get a video package for this one. If Scott Steiner doesn't wrestle, he's barred from either WCW or wrestling from life, depending on who says it. I did have an important question during the entrances of this match.
Yeah.
And it's not who's that Pokemon or does it slap. Where's the Band-Aid? He had the Band-Aid on the back and it's gone now. He's healed.
His bluff was called.
I would have left it.
Yeah.
Scott stalls to start and the two trade punches and the crowd is hot for a big clothesline from Rick. Like, they want to see these guys. Because they've been setting up this match since like February or March.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Rick keeps hitting big right hands and Scott bails to the floor. Scott is sent into the crowd and then brought back. Scott counters a belly to belly with a low blow. We both noted, all right, you can't just write Steiner during any of these notes.
Right, you gotta be really careful and really specific on who does what.
Scott throws Rick to the floor and then around ringside. He ends up taunting the crowd. He then hits a clothesline and poses some more. Rick Steiner counters a butterfly suplex and hits a DDT. Rick then goes up top, but Buff Bagwell gets on the apron, so Rick Steiner very casually throws him into the ring post.
But he, like, grabs him by his neck to do so.
A little bit, but, yeah. Like, the bump on this is very unceremonious.
I mean, yeah, but he, like, the way he grabs him is kind of, like, by the scruff of his neck and just, bah.
Rick and Scott keep brawling as it appears Buff Bagwell is down, and Scott Steiner goes over to Buff, who's like, oh, it's my neck. And the match stops to rightful bullshit chants.
So Scott goes over to tend to Buff, and he's, you know, playing the part of concerned friend very well, you know.
They send out medical, like, this is legit, yeah. And not a work. Commentary and Rick Steiner are, like, kind of starting with, like, a, oh, I don't know about this, and then, like, oh, no, this is serious. And the crowd is clearly not buying this as right? real.
Yeah, no.
They are chanting bullshit to where commentary is like, oh, they're only booing him because, you know, who he's associated with. And it's like, no, they fucking know you two are fucking swerve magnets.
Right. They're not saying boo. They're saying boo words.
They're saying boo off.
Boo off.
We then get a stretcher coming out and Buff gets stretchered out. And like, holy shit, this is going on
they
for
are
so long.
This. It's minutes.
And Eric Bischoff comes out to sell this is real. And Buff's like, all right, like, somebody call my mom, please.
Oh, my God.
Like, Judy? Get Judy on the horn.
Do not stress Judy out like this. This is not worth it.
Bobby Heenan on commentary scorns anyone in the arena or at home for getting up to get a drink while this is happening.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
I'm like, yeah, fuck you.
What are they going to do? The people in the audience can't help. They can't see anything either. Like, what are they going to do?
Basically, you should be concerned and focused entirely on this and not focused on your own refreshments.
Oh, my God.
Meanwhile, all I wanted to do at this point, I think I might have actually gotten up to get a drink during this.
You may have, yeah.
So Buff gets loaded in the ambulance. The ambulance goes to leave and swerve. Scott and Buff come out of the back, attack Rick Steiner.
It was all fake.
I was fine the whole time.
I had no idea he was faking it. That's crazy.
Security breaks this up pretty quickly. Like, there's nothing like a big, like,
yeah.
There's like a big, like, oh, we have this massive beatdown we're going to do. It was just a fucking waste of time.
Honestly, it's that. It's not even insulting. It's not even, like, so fucking bad.
It's a little insulting.
It's a waste of time. It's, again, people paid for this show. And this is how we're going to spend.
And this was advertised.
Yeah, this match was advertised. You're right.
And as a reminder, in the next month, we get more Buff Bagwell bullshit. And I'm like, this is why I don't like Buff Bagwell, is this bullshit.
Right.
It's him condensed. And I'm like, I don't like you muddying all your shit. Also, the commentary is, you know, it's a bit performative, but also kind of accurate. They're like, this is really insulting to anybody who's actually had a serious neck injury.
That's true.
Including Buff Bagwell.
That's true.
The match itself, I mean, was pretty nothing. If I remember right, I like the combined matches from Halloween Havoc. I know I gave Rick Steiner MVP, who currently...
You mean the combined matches, sorry.
At Halloween Havoc, there's the weird tag match, which results in Rick Steiner and Buff Bagwell winning the tag titles, which then results in Rick Steiner and Scott Steiner having a match. It's really convoluted.
I don't remember any of that.
It recently came up on our Patreon quiz, because this is the title reign that results in Judy Bagwell becoming a tag champ for like a week.
Oh, God.
Oh, actually, we did watch this. This is the weird double swerve where Buff comes back in a Bill Clinton mask for some reason.
Oh, yeah. But Buff and Rick were the tag champions?
They win the tag championship, but because Buff turned on him, he doesn't count for Buff at all.
Hmm.
Despite the fact that he is Rick's partner in the match.
Weird.
Yeah, WCW, it's fucking stupid all the time. Then, now, forever.
Together.
Swerve, brother, they're not together. Or maybe they are, dude.
Maybe they are, dude.
My final note on this was just the post-match goes for so long that it makes you really ignore the match itself, which was like...
That's true.
Still getting going, and it is crazy how over Rick Steiner is here.
Yeah, and I remember him being really over at Halloween Havoc, too.
Yeah. And then it just vanishes because they don't do anything with him.
He just falls off a cliff.
But yeah, the injury bullshit just feels like bad juju. Like, don't do it. Our next match, I'm looking at my notes. I have very few notes for, weirdly enough. But it's a cruiserweight title match. It is Silver King versus Juventud Guerrera, who is our champion.
I was not excited about this match. You had a little more hope for it. I think the reason you only have a few notes is because you were just watching.
I have a note about Silver King that we'll have to wait until the very end of the show.
Why?
Just to highlight the mediocrity of this pay-per-view. But
oh, boy.
So, yeah, that to look forward to. Because, like, Silver King, I'm like, yeah, I don't really remember, like, anything he's kind of done in the timeline. Apparently, he won the Pinata Nepal match. He's the official winner of that match.
I don't remember even who was in that match at this point.
But Silver King in the wide shots looks like luchador Pete Gass.
Yes. Nick pulled this out while we were watching, and I was like, I don't think I see it. And then he pulled a picture of Pete Gass. It is uncanny.
And also Matt from Hell's Kitchen season 4.
Oh my God. That's a deeper cut. But Pete Gass, yes, 100%.
The two try to start quick to get the crowd back into it and then go into chain wrestling because the crowd is predictably dead after that angle.
Yeah. They all got up to go get a drink.
They couldn't hear Bobby Heenan. That's the problem.
Yeah, the audience didn't know how disrespectful they were being.
They trade chops and kicks back and forth until a Hoovy has scissors. Hoovy hits a springboard Hurricane Rana and then is popped up into a dropkick. Silver King spin tosses Hoovy onto the ropes, then hits a tilt-a-roll backbreaker. He follows up with like a muscle buster shoulder breaker to some boring chants.
Which is crazy because I don't think this is that boring. If anything, this is like a good palate cleanser from the last match. We definitely need the transition period between that match and this match because commentary is still so heated about it.
They're also been talking about the main event match in every match so far, so they're not focused.
That's true. They're not paying attention.
Oh, and speaking of chants, Silver King hits a triangle crossbody to the floor and gets Taco Bell chants. Great.
I didn't hear that.
Yep.
Oh, no. That's such a shame because the energy is so much better in this match than the last one. Honestly, the last couple. So, like, I hate that people are just racist and stupid. If you're going to be racist and stupid, at least be clever. Taco Bell is not a clever chant.
Like, Burger King for Jerry the King Lawler. Like, that works.
That works. This sure.
Yeah, not as much. If anything, Silver King's a little chubby. You can chant Burger King at him.
Sure. Or even just like, I don't know, if you want to chant Taco Bell, maybe pick a menu item. Be a little obscure. Make it be a thinker. I don't know.
Quesarito.
No, that's a good chant.
Emily just chants that around the house.
Guys, I cried when the quesarito came back. I'm not even lying.
Yeah, I didn't know how to respond to your text when you were like, I'm so excited. I'm like,
I was so happy.
You sent me this gift yesterday. I was just like, congratulations.
I was so happy.
Hoovy loses his grip on a sunset flip, and they kind of go to do it again, but then decide against it, and Hoovy hits a pop-up Hurricane Rana. Hoovy hits a missile drop kick, and then eats a super kick. Silver King crashes in the corner, and Hoovy hits a top rope poison Rana. Silver King counters a Hoovy driver into a small package, then hits a snap suplex, but Hoovy dodges a double springboard moonsault, then hits a pretty soft Hoovy driver, but he makes up for it by hitting a great 450 splash. Like, at the end of the Hoovy driver, they're really close to the ropes. I'm like, I don't know about that, but
yeah.
It hits it great.
You were so doubtful of this, and then you're like, wait, no, that looked great. That was how it was supposed to go.
It probably didn't help that we just saw him in 97 do one of these that was like a knee to the face, so I was a little uncalibrated, but yeah, Hoovy wins, and this match, unfortunately, was in a bit of a death spot based on how you killed the crowd.
I think they did okay to get back to it.
They did okay. That's the problem.
They did what they could to get the crowd back. Yeah. It was a steep uphill battle.
Yeah, I first noted that last segment killed the crowd. I'm like, that last segment, or three in reality. In reality,
this was the first, finally, some good fucking food. This is the first thing that is worth watching.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably a better match than the opener, but
yeah,
you pissed the crowd off with Goldberg Jericho, didn't give them anything with Ernest Miller versus Norman Smiley, then pissed them off again with Steiner versus Steiner.
Right. So we're just about an hour through the show, and people are mad. This, like, if I was in the crowd, I'd be like, what the fuck did I spend my money on?
We then go backstage. Conan is doing a WCW.com interview, and Scott Hall comes in with the cocktail mocks Conan and then throws a drink in Conan's face.
I forgot we were in this era of Scott Hall.
Last call, Scott Hall.
I forgot we were here, and I forgot how tasteless and bad this whole gimmick is.
Their match is not next. Instead, next up, it's Raven with Lodi and Canyon versus Perry, but not Perry Saturn. Just Saturn.
Is his name not Perry?
I think it's just Saturn here.
Oh, weird.
And we get a video clip package for this, and it's more or less set up that if Raven wins, Saturn has to rejoin the flock, and if Saturn wins, the flock has to be, like, disbanded, because...
The flock is set free.
Yeah, there's always been a weird element of Raven with, like, mind control is kind of how they tease this.
I think that's fun.
During the video package, we see that Saturn becomes Lodi's slave, and we get the most random Nick Dinsmore appearance here.
Who?
Well, in the package, Saturn makes someone lose to Nick Dinsmore. I forget who it was. Nick Dinsmore goes on to wrestle in WWE as the character of Eugene.
Oh.
He is in this package for 8 seconds.
I missed it.
Yeah, they just say Nick Dinsmore, and I'm like, wait a minute, what?
They said his name?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because, like, oh, he's going to lose to Nick Dinsmore here or something. Like, oh.
Weird.
So I just got, like, jump scared, like, ah.
Ah. Ah, it's uncomfortable.
Oh, and there is an additional stipulation that apparently just got made because they announced it as such. Kanyon will be handcuffed at ringside, and the key is given to the ref. Now, why Lodi is not handcuffed at ringside?
I mean, the video package did kind of make it seem like Kanyon is a little bit more...
competent?
Jumpy, is my thought. Like, ready to fight. Like, it came off as, like, Kanyon is going to be the one to jump in the ring and cause a problem. So it didn't, like, strike me as too weird that Kanyon was the one that was handcuffed, but it was weird that Lodi was even able to be there.
In all honesty, this is probably the best story going in WWE at this time going into the pay-per-view.
I think I agree, yeah.
And this is one of the few advertised matches on this card.
Okay, so this one actually pulls through.
Match starts, Saturn goes after Raven in the corner, but is dropped on the ropes. Raven hits a crossbody in the corner, then a knee lift. Saturn hits kicks in the corner, then a springboard forearm and goes up top for a diving splash. Breaking kayfabe, Lodi has a sign that says Uncuff Kanyon, even though the stipulation was added, like, right around the time they came out to the ring.
Huh. Oh, wait, was it really that soon?
I mean,
no,
maybe...
I don't think in kayfabe it was that soon. No.
Dave Penzer announces that this has just been added. However, it could have been added.
I see that as day of.
Yeah. But just one of those weird, like, huh, all right.
Yeah.
Saturn knocks Raven into the safety rail and then dives over the top rope onto Raven and Lodi.
Okay, see, I had a problem with this. It is a four-sided ring.
Yeah.
Saturn chose to dive over the only side of the ring that has two people plus his opponent to fuck him up. You had three other options.
Well, he's diving onto his opponent.
Lodi and Kanyon can get him where he jumped. Kanyon is attached to the ring. If you go to any other side, you have one fewer opponent.
Okay.
It didn't make any sense. He and even commentary noted it too. Or, yeah, somebody, I think maybe it was Lodi even. Because Lodi attacked him right after he jumped on. You had 75% of the ring was available to you to use the outside of. You chose the 125% that was going to put you in the most danger. You're stupid.
Yeah. Lodi throws Saturn into the guardrail after Raven is thrown back in. They do this behind the ref's back, and commentary goes, well, it doesn't really matter because this is Raven's rules, so it's no DQ. And I'm like, yeah, sometimes those instincts in wrestlers, it's just like, you don't have to be nonchalant about this. You can be blatant.
You can be chalant.
Raven hits two lame diving elbows, then it's a clothesline. Raven locks in a Glargaze sleeper. But Saturn gets out with a jawbreaker, which Raven tries to, like, pin Saturn after. I'm like, no, the move was hit to you.
I don't know, man.
Raven hits a duo of Russian leg sweeps and then climbs on top of Saturn cowgirl style to pin him.
Yeehaw, hey girl.
Like, this was a little something. That, like, I'm going to sit on you and, like, pin your hands down. And you have to, like, basically pelvic thrust to kick out.
I mean, it's the pelvic thrust that really drives us insane, so.
Raven then brings a chair in the ring and then drops to hold Saturn kind of face first onto it. It's looked better before. Mm. We then get Sick Boy, Scotty Riggs, and Horace coming out of the ring with a table.
Sorry, Sick Boy?
Yes.
That's a name.
Yeah, just don't. We don't have time. Kidman also comes out and he goes up top for the Shooting Star Press, which I was reminded that's not what the move is called here. It's called the 9-year itch because he's meant to have like a meth head gimmick.
I don't get that out of Billy Kidman at this point.
He looks a lot cleaner here than he does in the months leading up to this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He is in just Kidman attire here. He's not looking rough.
He looks fine. He looks like Billy Kidman.
Yeah.
He looks great.
But instead of the Shooting Star Press to Saturn, he instead hits a missile dropkick onto Raven.
Swerve, bro.
A face turn for Billy Kidman.
Ugh. I love him.
Most of the flock chase Kidman off, and Saturn hits a Death Valley driver, but Lodi manages to slow the ref enough for Raven to be able to kick out. We then get a big Saturn chant as he hits a T-bone suplex and starts a comeback. He hits a belly-to-belly suplex, then a scoop slam and a springboard leg drop. He follows up with a Michinoku driver, which they're like, oh, that's like kind of a Hoovy driver there. I'm like, you can't.
No.
You already stole the name. You can't double steal it.
Watch them.
He then locks in the Rings of Saturn. We're like, oh, we haven't seen that in a while. Lodi pulls him out of the hold. Raven holds Saturn up for a diving Lodi attack. But before they can do the one thing they didn't want to happen, I guess it's the other thing they didn't want to happen, because Saturn low blows Raven and then crotches Lodi. I'm like, oh, okay.
It's a really smooth low blow and then crotch. Like, one swift leg move for both of them. It's great.
The referee then gets bumped next to Canyon, who's able to steal the keys, uncuffs himself, and hits a flatliner on Saturn.
For this kayfabe to work, the ref has to be so KO'd. Like, unconscious.
Refs are glass, Emily.
I know. I forget that refs are glass, because they are glass. But he is so unconscious that he cannot feel Canyon, like, viscerally shaking his bag or his pocket or whatever it is. Whatever. Fine. He gets the key. He unhooks himself, hits the move, then slides back out, recuffs himself so that when the ref comes to, we don't know what happened. I've been here the whole time.
Yeah. Admittedly, I don't think he puts the key back.
I don't think he does either. I think you're right. Smart, though. Like, I think that was a very slick and smart move from Canyon.
However, the ref, like, crawls to count the pin. The ref wasn't going to see it regardless. Also, it's Raven's rules. It's like,
eh. I think that would still not. I think that would still harbor a DQ because you're hitting the referee.
Not in a no DQ match.
Attacking the referee doesn't.
It's no DQ. How do you get DQ'd?
Well, it would just, like, call the match. Like, that's not a DQ. That's a no contest.
It's all weird here.
I think that if you hit the ref,
we'll get to bullshit DQs in matches that shouldn't have it later.
I think that if you hit the ref, it's a no contest. Call the match out. Like. I think this was a good move.
Let's keep going, because this is a good match.
Yes, but, it is.
They wake up the ref after the flatliner, and Saturn kicks out. Like, the crowd got big into that too.
Was crazy. I got big into that. I was like, he fucking kicked out. That was wild.
Saturn low blows Raven, and then grabs Lodi, who is still on the top rope from getting crotched, hits a Death Valley driver through a table at ringside from the apron. Ugh. He gets back in. Raven hits an even flow DDT, and he's like, oh, that's it. Saturn kicks out.
He kicks out of the even flow.
Gets up pretty quick, hits a Death Valley driver to Raven again, and gets the win.
Woo!
The flock is free.
This is great.
Which really only, I guess it does impact Horace Hogan. I'm like, who does this really benefit? It's like Kidman.
Yeah, I don't know who it benefits.
Kidman's the biggest fucking beneficiary out of this.
But he already turned, so he was going to have all these guys against him, regardless of who won.
But this match definitely got there for me.
This was so good.
I was like kind of worried when Kidman comes out to do the, hey, I'm turning on Raven. I'm like, oh, I don't want this match to end here. I was worried that was going to be like the finish.
No.
And it's like, no, we had more spots there.
We had so much to go.
But they had some good storytelling and some great near falls. Like, my nitpicks for this are it opened kind of flat. And you kind of forget about the Kidman turn by the end.
If you are nitpicking.
Yeah, I'm nitpicking. That's the thing.
That's crazy to nitpick in this era.
Yeah.
After the five matches we just watched before this, you're going to nitpick?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Enjoy what we're watching. This is fucking good. Like, I penciled this in as a potential best pick contender before the low blow.
Yeah.
Like, at that point, I was like, oh, this could be it. This is great.
It was. It is a little disappointing where Raven goes from here in WCW, because they have nothing else for him here.
Yeah.
And, you know, Saturn's good, and I guess he does get a little slightly elevated from Lackey in the flock, but...
Flacky.
The problem is, and it's present in the video package, he can't cut a promo.
Oh, and he never can. He doesn't grow into it either. Like, poor Perry Saturn, he doesn't quite get there here, and then he gets fucking destroyed in WWE. Like, he becomes a joke. He's a butt of a joke in WWE.
Yeah, well, to be fair, that's a punishment for him being a fuckhead.
Tell me more.
The Moppy gimmick is a punishment for him abusing a jobber.
Oh.
Jobber botches a move, so Perry Saturn just beats the shit out of him during that match.
Well.
No, don't well that.
No, I'm saying, well, I'm wrong, never mind. He just never really gets his comeuppance, I guess.
Yeah, but like, even here, later in WCW, they turn him out to be an idiot, so maybe there's something about Perry Saturn we don't know.
Maybe.
Last thing, yeah, obviously, as we say, this is a good match. This is the one thing to seek out on this show.
Yes, agreed.
We then go to commentary, and Tony Schiavone gives an update from Jim Duggan's wife on Jim Duggan, because recently Duggan cut a promo that he's like, I have cancer, and I have to leave for a while. And they got the update tonight that the doctors managed to remove the tumor, and like, he's heading home tomorrow. It's like, wow, oh, shit.
That's very successful.
And then in a cute moment, commentary collectively gives a little, ho!
That was very sweet. I liked that a lot. But the cut from the Ravens Flock match to this conversation back to the ring was very confusing for me.
Yeah, you get one quiet line of Tony Schiavone dialogue to set it up, and that's it. So if you miss that, like, well, fuck
it's,
you.
It's just confusing because, like, they go from the close-up shot of the ring to stuff happening to the wide shot of the audience, and this is when commentary is doing their conversation about Jim Duggan, yada yada. But while they're doing this conversation, there is wrestling happening in the ring, or there's like people in the ring. I don't entirely know. It looks like wrestling from afar because we're in the audience view. And then it just cuts to back in the ring, more stuff happening for the next upcoming match. But turns out this was a pivot into a promo package, but I completely missed that. And it was just such a, the cuts between the three were very seamless, but they needed to have more seam. Because I was confused.
Yes, I managed to actually pinpoint why this is jarring. So what happens is they go, ho, and then Tony throws to talking about the next match, which is going to be Dean Malenko versus Kurt Hennig. And the video clip package they have has no graphics over it.
No.
But the biggest problem is it cuts from a crowd shot to suddenly we're inside a cage with Dean Malenko and Kurt Hennig. And Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan are talking
yes.
as part of the match. The other video packages, it had wrestlers doing promos. So it was like, all right, you're able to calibrate a little bit. Here it was just like, wait, like, is there a weird cut? Or like,
I texted Nick and I was like, I think our file is corrupt. I think we missed the beginning of this match.
Yeah, but then if you look, like, okay, no, there's the Nitro emblem on the ring. So this is from someday, but like they didn't set it up at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, but effectively, we're just watching half of a cage match from a recent Nitro of Kurt Hennig and Dean Malenko.
Yeah.
And Emily, did you catch how this match ends?
No. I was so jostled. Like, I was confused.
This cage match ends in a disqualification.
We've seen that before.
Rarely.
The red cage.
That, I stand by, I think that was ref stoppage.
If you say so.
It's still bad, but that one I think actually does have a finish. Mm. Additionally, we would just watch these two have a cage match. So this match feels like a downgrade. It's like, oh, you didn't sell this in a cage? How about a one-on-one normal match pay-per-view?
That'll show him.
Also, during that cage match, Arn Anderson returned, and apparently he was debating returning to wrestling at this point, and you can tell how bad he wants to wrestle.
Oh.
It's just a mix of his body's not up for it and health insurance.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, our match, it's Dean Malenko versus Kurt Hennig with Rick Rude. And Hennig is just in gym shorts here, and I don't like it. I don't like the look.
What does he usually wear?
The singlet with, like, you know,
the pants-wise.
I mean, it just, like...
Is it shorts?
It's the singlet that has the little, like, kind of short, like, the briefs look with it.
This didn't strike me as that weird.
Like, I don't know. I didn't like it. Dean rushes Hennig to start, so Hennig bails. But Dean goes after him to We Want Flair Chance. Malenko fights off Rude and then smashes Hennig's leg into the ring post. Commentary talks what happened at last year's Fall Brawl, and I'm like, please let Emily not be listening to commentary.
I did not.
Good. All right.
I'm so sorry.
We got that on the Patreon. Like, no, I didn't want you to hear it. We're good.
It's a good thing we were watching this together at this point.
I just suddenly mute.
Yeah.
We were watching something recently. It was a top 10, and it was like Starcade 1997. I'm like, skip, 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 skip.
That always happens at, like, the weirdest videos. So, like, I'm a very much, like, a tune-out kind of person, like, especially with commentary. But YouTube videos, too, I just have it as background noise. So I'm, like, tuned into something else on my phone or whatever. And then I just hear Nick, like, scramble, panic, skip, skip, skip. I'm like, that brought me back into it. I'm like, well, now I want to know what you just skipped.
Dean counters a scoop slam, and then he's working the knee of Hennig. Hennig pokes the eye and then hits a head scissors stomp, but Dean grabs leg and hits a knee breaker. Rude grabs Hennig and they would leave as one of the cameramen falls over.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what happened here. We never see the cameraman on the ground.
No.
I was looking for him in the next couple shots.
Malenko brings Hennig back, who begs off, but Dean dropkicks his knee. Malenko locks in a knee bar, but Rude helps Hennig get to the ropes. But Dean gets Hennig back in the center of the ring. Then it's a back suplex, and then is kicked by Rude. Hennig wants a Hennigplex, but his knee won't allow it. Malenko manages to hit a Hennigplex, which, God, Perfectplex is so much better than Hennigplex.
Especially for you. Like, you cannot say Hennigplex. Neither can I, apparently. Like, that's impossible to say.
So Dean hits the Perfectplex, and Rick Rude comes in, kicks him DQ.
Sure.
Great.
Great. I love a DQ finish.
The crowd await Ric Flair as Dean gets beat down. Arn Anderson comes out and is just hit with punches, and Hennig really tries to hurt Arn's arm as they ring the bell over and over and over again during this.
Yeah, of course.
And apparently they're going after the arm because on the upcoming Thunder,
Arn has an arm wrestling match.
Yes, with Eric. With
now
Eric
he's at a disadvantage for the arm wrestling match.
Now,
this is so like Disney Channel coded to me, and I don't know why.
It's also even stupider, Emily, because Arn is facing Eric Bischoff in an arm wrestling match on the upcoming Thunder. If Arn wins, he can reform the Horsemen. There is one show in between this show and Thunder. Do you know what Arn Anderson does on that fucking show?
Re-ups the Horsemen.
He reforms the fucking Horsemen.
That tracks.
And it's also like, all right, if I win, Ric Flair can come back. You know who comes back on that fucking show?
Ric Flair?
Yeah.
Yeah, it tracks.
Admittedly, I did not watch the Thunder, so I don't even know if they try to retcon it. But yeah, it's like making the previous rounds a complete waste.
Jeez.
This match was a slow match with a bullshit finish.
Yes.
I was like, I was disappointed because I'm like, Mr. Perfect and Dean Malenko, these two should have a good match, and they just don't here.
There was a funny line from commentary, though. I think it was when they were talking about the fact that Kurt Hennig just got back from surgery, or his knee is recovering from surgery. And commentary goes, "We have a great medical team. Not Schwartz, though. Schwartz isn't a doctor. If he's a doctor, you're a nice guy." It was just, it was very funny to me.
This is the doctor for Buff Bagwell and Scott Steiner, by the way.
Oh, okay.
That is Dr. Cecil Schwartz.
That's a hell of a name.
Yeah, it's a Cecil fake name. It's a fake Schwartz, doctor.
It's a hard name to say. If he's a doctor, you're a nice guy. It just feels like it should be said in black and white with the subtitles, with some like piano jazz over it.
Any other thoughts on this match?
Yeah, it was fun for all the wrong reasons.
As great as the Nitro segment is, I'm like, I wonder, like, should you have had Ric Flair come out here? Or
no, well, no.
It's a smaller audience, and I guess you didn't advertise his return, so I guess, yeah, that makes sense. Don't do it here, but
yeah,
you really set the crowd up to be like, all right, Flair?
I don't know, it was such a messy ending, especially. I think, like, Ric Flair coming in might have overshadowed what was already a mess.
Well, yeah. The whole point is to overshadow the mediocre match that just happened.
I want him to come out in a more meaningful moment, which I guess he doesn't, but
yeah, once again, I'll definitely have to, like, put that promo on for you, because the crowd is so fucking hot for that. It's like, oh my god, this is why wrestling's so goddamn popular.
Right.
We then get a Halloween Havoc ad, and that brings us into Scott Hall with Vincent versus Conan. Scott Hall comes out late to his song with a beverage in hand, and which he hands off to Vincent for Hall's entrance. Hall gets into the wrong ring because he's drunk, and he stumbles around before grabbing a mic, and hey, yeah.
He takes a hot minute to get there.
Yeah, it's survey time. He's uninterested, which part of me is like, is it you pretending to be drunk, or are you just kind of over this gimmick? For what it's worth, Scott Hall and his peers claim he never actually worked drunk.
Really?
No, it was outside of working hours.
Okay, that does make me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, like he's not being unsafe here.
Okay, that makes me feel better.
That said, potentially the people who would say this are his buddies.
That would want to protect him.
Based on the actual like wrestling of this, I don't get the vibe he is drunk.
No, it really just is the mannerisms. Plus, like, he's drinking so slowly, and there's, like, yeah, a sip in that cup.
He also just always had, like, an aloof vibe, which is really easy to kind of translate.
That's true.
Conan comes out, does his promo in the other ring, and rowdy, rowdy, and bowdy, bowdy, and
bowdy, bowdy, bowdy. We haven't heard this promo in so long. I got a little nostalgic. I was like, wow, this is kind of nice.
Bell rings, Hall goes to the other ring, and then goes to the first one when Conan joins him in the other ring. Hall throws his toothpick at Conan, so Conan grabs his dick at Hall. Hall works over the arm, but Conan takes him down and hits tiny slaps. Hall fucks with Conan, wanting a test of strength, so Conan slaps him, then hits a rolling clothesline. Conan then stomps Hall into the gap between the two rings, which Hall falls in and then crawls out the other side of the ring. Ugh. So, notably, a human being can fit in between the two rings.
Yes.
So you potentially wouldn't need a trap door to get somebody in the ring.
To what could you be referring?
Despite Hall crawling out, Conan is not fooled and still manages to, like, keep the advantage. Hall takes his drink from Vincent for a second and then mocks the ref who's counting him out while he's standing on the apron. I don't think I've ever actually seen anybody get counted out while standing on the apron, like, to a count out finish.
I mean, Hall was kind of, like, taunting him for this, too, which the mocking was kind of funny.
Hall then locks in a standing bow and arrow, and they stay in this for a while. Conan counters it, but Hall hits a sneaky low blow. Scott hits a fall-away slam, then locks in the abdominal stretch near the ropes so he can be handed his drink, which, say what you will about the Speak of Taste's gimmick, I kind of laughed at that.
It's kind of funny. Like, he's charming. The man knows how to be charming.
Like, he just had this for someone who was light and having a good time. Like, that'd be fine. The fact that you're having this be he has a problem.
Like, the fact that he's not drunk does kind of make it go a little bit more that
like
that
I route. Could see Logan Paul doing this shit with Prime.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I think he kind of has done that.
Something like it.
Something like it.
Hall counters a stretch from Conan, but Conan dodges elbow drops. The crowd gets distracted by something on the ramp, which never comes up, as Hall hits a top rope back suplex. Hall then distracts himself with his drink, and Conan kicks the drink out of his hands, then hits a facebuster and locks in a tequila sunrise for the win.
Which is just a great moveset.
Commentary did not play into the irony of that enough.
Yeah, you're right. It's funny. It's funny.
But this match was definitely boring. You thought this was one of the worst matches you've ever seen.
It was fucking terrible.
I didn't get there on
it's
that.
It's less bad knowing that he's not actually drunk. I kind of did watch this thinking that he was fucked up. And like that to me makes it terrible. I also don't think Conan's a good wrestler. So that kills it for me.
He
so
is from both weirdly ends, over, though.
Isn't he? It's weird. It's weird how over he is. But both sides of that, the Scott Hall of it all and the Conan of it all, I fucking hated this. I stand by. This is probably still the worst match on the card.
Like, the Scott Hall gimmick, and this happens a lot in wrestling of, someone with an addiction problem, we have them portray that on TV. Like, when has that ever worked, and how is that supposed to get somebody over?
Right. The other thing that I noted in this, you mentioned a good couple of moves in this. I think you were exaggerating the move of it all, because they were not doing, there was like no wrestling. There was no wrestling in this match. They were just spooky fingers and, let me go get my drink, and Conan being like, oh, lale. Like, that's the whole match.
Yeah, like I said, it wasn't a ton going on.
There was nothing going on.
I
so that gave me so much time to be pissed about the alcoholic side of the story. And the fact that Conan's not doing shit.
I'll put it this way. This is not my worst bit on the show.
That's crazy. This is the worst bit.
If you wanna,
I recognize that the main event is coming up, but this is still the worst bit.
Yeah, if you want to get to my worst bit, it's time for our main event.
Oh my God. How the hell are we here?
Which, by the way, I may have just... Oh wait, I can't. It's only one big cue. I can't jangle ice. Oh no.
He made himself a drink.
Yeah.
We have a no ice rule. I mean, we have a no ice rule because we're in Baltimore, but we have a no ice rule for the podcast because it makes noise. And you come up here with Big Cube. You just got lucky that it doesn't jangle. There it is.
I'm the editor. Our main event for the evening, it is War Games, kinda.
But it's Michael Buffer time.
Yep, he is here to announce the teams. It's Team WCW of Roddy Piper, Warrior, and Diamond Dallas Page. Versus the Wolfpack of Kevin Nash, Lex Luger, and Sting. Versus the NWO of Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart, and Stevie Ray.
Oh, brother.
The winner gets title shot at Halloween Havoc. And, yeah, Buffer does not seem to give a much of a fuck during any of this.
He gives an appropriate amount of fuck for the amount of quality we're about to see.
The cage lowers and pyro goes off as Buffer explains the new rules that it's basically one fall to a finish. You can pin anybody anytime. And I'm like, yeah, I doubt it will actually end before everyone's here, like everyone keeps saying.
Yeah.
And the cage is lowering to music, which is very repetitive music. Then Diamond Dallas Page comes out to the same music.
Which was very confusing.
Then the music ends. And it restarts for Bret Hart to come out to the same music. This song will not fucking end.
This is the song that never ends.
I legitimately think we heard this song more than we heard any NWO theme tonight.
That is probably true. Yeah, there really wasn't much in. There was like two so far.
Yeah, the two Scotts, I think.
Yeah, Scott Hall, Scott Steiner. Yeah.
But yeah, so it is DDP and Bret Hart starting, which admittedly as choices, I'm like, that's probably your best bet here.
Probably.
Bret has also been teasing a face turn, which I'm like looking at more and more, I think was meant to lead to Bret versus Hogan at Starrcade, and they just don't do it.
Maybe.
They double down on Bret being a heel soon, but Hogan's not at Starrcade, so.
Oh.
Plans change, brother. I gotta run for president, dude.
Yeah, he's totally doing that.
We're literally within like a month or two of that.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez. I forgot how early in the podcast that was.
Yeah, because he announces he's running in late 98. It's like, it's not.
Or 2000, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you had the realization of, oh my God, what if Hulk Hogan was president during 2001?
It would have been a very different America.
He just beat Sergeant Slaughter again. Oh, and as this match is starting, commentary is like, oh, and Sting has a world title match tomorrow night on Nitro. I'm like, oh, so he's not winning.
Sting's not winning. Yeah, that tracks.
Admittedly, I remember the card of Halloween Havoc, so I know who wins this match, but you had forgotten.
I had. And you know what? I'm starting to think of my memory problems as kind of not being a problem, because this means I get to watch the same thing multiple times and enjoy it as if it was my first time.
So you're saying when we're done, we're going to go full Jey Uso and run it back.
Don't summon that to this podcast. We've gone so far. We don't talk about current day stuff, so we don't have to talk about the Usos. We don't have to talk about Yeet. Don't summon that.
No,
but also,
no Yeet, Emily.
Fuck off. Also, we could. I could go back to the beginning and watch that episode again and probably not remember how anything happened. I could relive the war.
This feels like a Sisyphusian curse where every time we finish the podcast, you have to restart it because you don't remember.
Yeah, that is Sisyphean.
Anyway, match starts. The two work on each other's arms, then slap each other. DDP hits a belly-to-belly suplex, then wants a diamond cutter, but is pushed off. Bret hits a DDT with 3 minutes left before the next entrant. Apparently, there's a 5-minute period there, so those notes took up the first 2 minutes of the match. Bret hits a backbreaker, then a headbutt to the stomach, and it feels like they're stalling.
Did you actually time this? Do they actually get 5 minutes?
I think they do, just because the clock is pretty consistently on screen for a lot of time.
Later in the match, it's consistent. I don't remember it being consistent at the beginning.
I don't know. Bret hits a backbreaker, then throws DDP around. DDP hits a discus clothesline, and both men are down for entrant number 3. It's Stevie Ray. That'll liven things up.
Yay!
The worst possible number 3 entrant.
Yay! Don't say that. What if... Yo, put that on your drinking. What if fucking Stevie Ray comes back at the Rumble? That'd be crazy.
Not in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, true.
Oh, apparently...
God, I hate that we're in fucking Saudi Arabia.
Apparently him and Vince Russo have a podcast called Black and White.
No, they don't. Current day? No, the fuck they don't.
Yep.
Talk about a cursed podcast. That's insane. I need to find that.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
Emily, your mental health isn't great. We don't need to lower it more.
I'm still at that point where when I'm listening to podcasts, every once in a while, it will autoplay the most recent 83 Weeks episode. So sometimes I'll be like walking or you're doing something. I'll go from NPR podcast to Eric Bischoff's voice in my ear. And like that'll wake you up.
So because Bret and Stevie are both team NWO, despite the fact that Bret is like partially kicked out of the NWO here, DDP hits a double clothesline on the two, and Stevie Ray just gets up first. Like, no, I'm not selling. Entry number 4 is Sting, and the crowd perks up. Sting leaps from one ring into the other onto Stevie Ray, which was, oh, it's kind of cool, like a little sloppy. Everything slows down again.
Uh-huh.
Entry number 5 is Piper.
Fucking nothing is happening there, in between these.
There are 2 minutes in between entrants.
Yeah, but nothing is happening in these 2 minutes.
Piper comes in and punches everyone, including his partner. Partner there in quotes, because he's like, yeah, it doesn't matter. It's every man for himself, because only one person can win.
Right, but Piper was the first one to really break the mold of the quote-unquote teams.
Which, later in the match, Tony Schiavone's like, you think we're going to have partners turning on each other soon? It's like...
We already did. Yeah. Brother, we already did.
Entrant number 6 is Lex Luger. He comes in with no urgency and just kind of punches everybody. Piper then kind of locks in a sleeper and no one cares and it's broken up. He then fully locks in a sleeper, aka his finisher, on Stevie Ray and no one breaks it up.
And does Stevie Ray even sell it?
It's a sleeper. He can only sell it so much, but yeah. Entrant number 7 is Kevin Nash. He gets pyro for some reason.
Yeah, And he throws like a couple punches.
He actually does break up the sleeper. So he's the one who was okay. Like, okay, I don't want to lose this. Entry number 8, Hulk Hogan comes out more than a minute early for his section.
God forbid Kevin Nash have any time in there to have a moment.
He also comes down as Piper stops a jackknife to Stevie Ray. Hulk Hogan just walks in. It's fine. No one tries to stop him. He hits slapjack shots to everyone besides Stevie Ray. But he also hits one to Luger, who had Brett in the torture rack. And like, okay. He doesn't try to pin anybody here, despite the fact that he could and wants to hit a shot badly.
Yeah.
At one point, they actually move Kevin Nash's body out of the center of the ring.
Yeah, I thought that was weird.
Well, it's because there's a trap door, brother.
I know, but just like the moving of the body was very jarring.
Yeah, because he moves him and then hits a leg drop, taunts the crowd, because the timer runs down, no one comes out because he came out early for his time.
Yeah, sure.
So then on a second leg drop, he eventually goes for a cover. But then we get smoke starting to fill the ring.
It fills the ring pretty fast.
Yeah, it's rapid fire smoke guns here. And when the smoke clears, the Ultimate Warrior, sorry, not the Ultimate Warrior, sorry, Warrior is beating his chest, having teleported to the middle of the ring.
Sure.
Hulk Hogan hits it from behind, taking him out.
That pissed me off so bad. I don't know why that pissed me off so bad, but like, Warrior has spooky supernatural powers. He appears. That doesn't work for me, brother. Like, let him have a moment.
So also, actually, to quote Hulk Hogan, this is not the Ultimate Warrior, brother. This one is played by the Renegade.
I figured this was a fake Warrior.
Yeah, who was the knockoff Ultimate Warrior in 95.
I did have a feeling this was a fake Warrior.
Well, yeah, obviously.
You know
Warrior can't actually teleport, right?
No. Magic.
But Hogan steals the jacket as the smoke happens again, and the Warrior teleports again.
Because he's magic.
Yeah, this is where I noted, I'm like, you don't need the trapdoor. He really could have just rolled between the two rings.
Yes, there was really no reason for the trapdoor. You're right.
We then get the countdown, but Warrior comes out 12 seconds early with Pyro again, and he runs from the back.
What is the point of the countdown if two of the biggest names are saying, fuck the countdown?
Also, I guess we didn't acknowledge this. When the countdown happens, like, no one's music plays or anything, no. So there's not much of a pop.
There's no music, and there's barely an announcement.
But Warrior runs out to the ring. He beats up Hogan and Stevie Ray as everyone else is still dead from the slapjack shots. Hogan bails with help from the Disciple. So Hogan and Disciple lock the cage door behind them as Warrior's beating down Stevie Ray. They then have to, like, walk around the ring for a bit. I don't know why. And Warrior climbs the cage and kicks out a section of the cage.
I thought this was kind of cool.
It's a little less cool because when he drops, he hurts himself. You see him limping after Hogan during the next thing.
Oh, I didn't even see it was a limp.
Now, I have to ask the question that everyone has asked. Emily, he kicked out the cage.
Yeah.
Why?
Because he's feral. He's crazed. He wants to get to Hogan because Hogan came out of the cage.
Why does he not teleport again?
Because...
Why does he not teleport again out of the ring? You've established he can teleport, and then you dropped it in the middle of the match when he gets locked in.
But he's obviously not locked in because he doesn't need the teleport here. He can get out just fine. He doesn't need it.
He sprains his ankle and apparently tears his bicep during some portion of this.
Maybe Jim Hellwig did, but the Warrior didn't.
Sorry, there is no Jim Hellwig at this point. He is just Warrior. He's changed his name.
Oh, Jesus Christ, I forgot he did that.
Yeah, because he's like, I can use the copyright.
Oh, my God.
I think they also say this is Warrior's first match in like 8 years, and I'm like, he did have a really shitty WWE run in between.
He's not having a great WCW run either.
So Warrior brawls with Hogan going up the ramp. Back in the ring, Stevie Ray kind of slapjacks Bret Hart. They're meant to do a spot where, like, it's either DDP ducking it or Bret Hart pushing him out of the way. No one's really been sure what the fuck it's meant to be.
Oh, no.
And DDP then hits a diamond cutter on Stevie Ray and wins. That's the match.
That's the whole match. That's it.
This is a 20-minute match.
Nothing happens.
Yeah. I mean, like, there was a move or two in the first 5 minutes, and I want to say or two. And then after that, it's just Warrior bullshit and DDP wins. There's 15 minutes of nothing wrestling with 8 of your biggest stars and Stevie Ray.
Yeah, that tracks.
DDP celebrates in the crowd, and yeah, just like, this fucking match. This is, to reference Dave Meltzer again, this is the lowest score he has ever given a WCW main event.
And what was the score?
-4 stars.
Jeez. I think it was bad. I don't think it was negative 4 stars bad. I will stand by the warrior kick. I thought that was pretty sick, actually.
Keep in mind the time of picture you paid for this, yeah, and this is what they gave you.
But again, our bar is skewed because this would have been like, this is amazing. It just in 2 short years.
I don't think so.
I don't know, man.
Again, they didn't do anything in this match.
Yeah.
Like, no one took a bump at any point,
that,
I don't think.
Yeah, that. There were no bumps.
And there is an element with us to where we don't have the nostalgia and respect for war games.
No.
I don't like the stipulation. Admittedly, I'm like, we're getting closer here. As I said, have it be an elimination match. That makes more sense.
I think, like, even modern day, war games doesn't work.
No, and I think everyone is coming around to that. It worked in NXT, and it doesn't work now.
But Elimination Chamber does work. And I know, I recognize that they're different. I think it was last year's War Games where they were all standing in those little cages.
That would have been 2 years ago. We didn't even watch last year's War Games.
Yikes.
I mean,
okay, two years ago.
It was in the middle of the ESPN. We didn't have the VPN thing.
Oh,
but,
right.
Yeah.
But no, last 2 years ago's War Games was silly because those cages were silly.
Well, that's the way they used to do it. Because actually during this match, they note, oh yeah, everyone's in the back, unlike previous years. And I'm like, we just did 96 where they didn't do the everyone's right at ringside. Yeah, it just... It's a stipulation that doesn't really work, I don't think. I think it's way too old school.
It is old school. You're right.
But also the reason why Elimination Chamber works, as you were mentioning, is there's literally always something on the line. Now, granted, there was something on the line here, but some War Games matches, like, what do you win? Momentum.
Yep.
This match, it's somewhat easy and incredibly difficult to compare to the uncensored Triple Doomsday Cage match of the Mega Powers versus 9 men. Where no one can bump because the cage isn't safe.
Yeah, that's different, though.
But that one, at a certain point, it's so crazy because too many things are happening.
Yeah.
Where Hogan and Sullivan leave the cage and go brawl in the ring. It's like,
because
the cage isn't
safe.
That one I ask, what is happening here? This one I ask, is anything going to happen here?
Right.
For that being one of your only selling points, because I mentioned that we're going to talk about Silver King at the end of this show. I want to break down this show as a whole, because I think we've kind of said as much as we're going to say about the
main event. I think we have. Yeah, you're right.
Fall Brawl 1998 is a very bad show.
Sure.
And it's worth most people kind of give it credit for, as we kind of said at the start of this. It rarely appears in a bottom, like, 20. I haven't even seen it.
Jeez.
It's not rated particularly badly by everybody, but let's run through these matches.
Okay.
So our opening match is Jim Neidhart and the British Bulldog versus Alex Wright and Disco Inferno.
Okay.
Unadvertised match. So you didn't, no one paid for that match.
Sure.
Jericho and Goldberg, unadvertised and bait and switch to piss off the crowd.
Sure.
Kat versus Norman Smiley, unadvertised. Rick Steiner versus Scott Steiner, bait and switch finish.
Yes.
Hoovy versus Silver King. This was a rematch because when they did the title match, the challenger got disqualified.
Oh.
Additionally, Silver King has never won a one-on-one match on Nitro or Thunder or pay-per-view to this point. And I looked, and he never will.
Jeez.
He only wins one-on-one matches on Saturday night.
Jeez.
So that's why the crowd doesn't give a shit about Silver King.
That would make sense.
Perry Saturn versus Raven. Actually good. No notes.
No notes. Great, great match.
Dean Malenko versus Kurt Hennig. A bullshit finish after doing a cage match with a bullshit finish. Scott Hall versus Conan. Just like a faction match. There really wasn't much of a reason for this one. I think this is one that got booked on the Thunder before. It was like, well, your factions are feuding, so you two can have a match, right?
So, no build. Barely advertised.
And then the War Games match, which is one of the worst and laziest pay-per-view main events I have ever seen.
Jeez. Yeah, it's a great show.
Dear God. I really wonder, because Halloween Havoc, we're like, you know what? Maybe this is going to be okay. We had started with this show, when we'd be like, oh, no.
I think it's, in hindsight, a good thing that we started with Halloween Havoc, because we started with a high note, and we could just, like, slowly descend.
With a touch of the bad note of Hogan and Warrior.
But we started high and only descended, because this podcast is about the downfall. We can't start with an uphill. It's got to be the downfall.
You call this an uphill?
Well, no, I'm saying this is bad. If we had started here at Fall Brawl and then gone to Halloween Havoc, that would have been an uphill. And then it plummets after Halloween Havoc.
Yeah, Halloween Havoc is just a step up to the ledge.
Yeah, well, yeah, it is. You're right.
Yeah, this show is...
quite bad. Listen, we're not arguing that. But I think that this is very telling of how far this show has fallen, because this was bad and it gets worse.
Honestly, I was debating that because I'm like, we've kind of been grading stuff on the Patreon with the curve of like, all right, it wasn't the best show, but like, it's not 2000.
Yeah.
I still think the only thing this show has going for it is retrospective gravitas. And I think if they put on this exact show in 2000, yeah, this would not be anything.
I mean, it's not anything in 98, but I'm just like, like, I don't agree. I think that this is still better than anything we're watching in 2000.
And I actually wonder how much heavy lifting that Raven Perry Saturn match is doing.
Because
that's the only match where I like felt something.
But the other thing that you need to remember is there are characters throughout this show. Characters.
Yeah.
We actually get characters. That's what I'm saying. We have Chris Jericho and his whole gimmick characterized. We have like the cruiserweight division exists. Like Raven's Flock has individual characters.
I'll push back on that.
I'm saying like all the luchas and like there are the Mexican wrestlers and the Japanese wrestlers are still here. Like we have the Raven's Flock has all the individualized characters with their own stories and motivations. Like there is a more fleshed out base here. Yes, it's a bad show, but it has more of a fleshed out base to go off of. There is no base in 2000. So we are starting at zero and ending at -5.
It also like doesn't feel as desperate here. Like this feels
it
like
doesn't feel desperate.
This
right.
Feels like they're coasting.
Yes.
As opposed to 2000 where it feels like they don't care.
Exactly. So that's why I think
minus
that,
the cruiserweights who are like, please do something
right.
with us.
Like we still have three count, but like, please pay attention to me. I love it. Like I love doing this. But that's why I'm saying this is not as bad as 2000. There is still a little bit of heart in this. There's no heart in 2000.
Which honestly frustrates me more.
Yeah.
The fact that, like, apparently Road Wild is also a very bad pay-per-view. Really? And it's like, no, this is supposed to be when you guys are on top and this is what you give us?
They don't have to work to stay at the top because they're just that good, brother.
And no, they're not.
Well, that's what they think. That's what Eric Bischoff is thinking in his back office.
You know, shows like this, that'll put some butts in the seats.
And with that, shall we go to our best bit, worst bit, and MVP, Nick?
Yeah, let's do it. I have a feeling we might line up on two out of the three of these. But I think we said we differ on the worst bit. But best bit, Saturn Raven?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Easily the best match.
Worst bit, I gave it to the main event.
I gave it to Conan Scott Hall. It's bad.
Emily,
no.
I wrote down moves they did in that match.
What moves? There were no moves.
They hit a...
Warrior kicked out a panel of the fence. That's cooler than anything that happened in the Conan Scott Hall match. There was pyrotechnics that happened in the
Was that worth 20 minutes of your time?
I would rather watch the main event again than the Conan Scott Hall match.
Honorable mention, worst bit to the fucking Buff Bagwell injury angle.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised you didn't give it to me.
I'm torn. I'm still going to the main event, but yeah, that one pissed me off.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel you.
And then, Emily, who do you have for your MVP?
I have no idea. I was going to ask you who yours was.
Saturn.
I was going to go to like the tried and true of like, okay, pick somebody from your main event. I'm not going to give it to Raven. I was kind of thinking Canyon because of his cool move.
Yeah, he did.
But Saturn
good,
also makes sense.
Yeah, I think Saturn put in more work and
he definitely did. You're right.
Carried that more. But yeah, like.
I'll agree. I'll say Saturn.
I mean, admittedly, Canyon hit his spots and his timing incredibly well.
He did.
But yeah, I think it has to be Saturn there. And as much as I love a lot of guys in the main event, no one deserves it from that.
God, no.
I really thought, like, maybe, oh, DDP and Brett starting. Maybe they'll, like, do... No.
I forget that Brett's in this match, like, 90 seconds in.
So, Emily, our next episode, we're back to 2000.
I don't know that I'm thankful for that.
And we're back to 2000 for the last time. It's the last episode of 2000.
That's crazy.
And then we get a little break from Nitro again, because we go into the final ECW episodes we're going to do.
Oh, my God. It's all wrapping up. This is crazy.
Like thinking, like, God, ECW One Night Stand 2005. I'm like, it's probably going to be one of the top three shows we ever actually watch for this.
Really?
And none of them are WCW. But it lines up kind of nice because the first Nitro of 2001 will be coming out on the 25th anniversary of the purchase.
Damn.
We enter the final year on the anniversary.
That's crazy.
And then it's going to take us until October to get to the end of March.
Yeah, on our timeline. That's wild. Oh my God. Ah! I can't believe it's all around. It's all coming to an end.
It is.
Everything's wrapping up.
But considering this is episode 150, you have 149 plus technically a couple other episodes on all our back catalog to listen to get fully caught up on this final journey we're about to go into.
Yeah, we've done a lot. We've traversed a lot of different side paths, but we have done now 150 canonical episodes following the path of WCW through the late 90s, early 2000s.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can on our social media, at Butts in the Pod. Plus, the person who let us know about the Vince Russo book coming out did so on Spotify comments, which I forget we do have access to. Like, yes. I get notified. It just isn't the most utilized tool we have.
True. That is true.
And mentioned quite often by us, we have the Patreon, patreon.com/buttsintheseats. $5 a month gets you
so many episodes at this point,
including a fun upcoming bonus episode towards the beginning of February of TNA Genesis 2007.
Yes, it is Nick's birthday, so he gets to pick the show that we watch. So he has chosen TNA Genesis.
Yes, I did.
Why? Why can't we watch something good?
There's a match I'm looking forward to on that. But we also have a bunch of other stuff over there, including the previous Vince Russo book report.
Yes.
I guess technically books report, because you did mention Unforgiven there.
I did sneak in another.
Emily, good news. I don't think Eric Bischoff is writing a second book.
Don't say that. Don't put that into the world, because he's going to hear that Russo wrote a book and be like, I could write a book.
He only wrote the book because WWE kind of made him.
I don't know, man.
But also over there, we have the rise of the NWO arc currently going on around that birthday episode.
Yeah, which we are having a lot of fun with. So if you want to go and join us on that journey, $5 a month, get you access to all of that.
Emily, any closing thoughts before we go back to the future?
Thank you for following us for 150 episodes.
Back to the future, which is still the past.
Jesus.
Yeah, 150 episodes. It's
crazy. That's a huge number.
We say it every time. It's too many.
We've done too much. We should stop. What if we just stopped here? What if we just decided we were done?
Hey, as of right now, the Raw After Survivor Series is going to be episode 199. So we got 49 more at least.
Jesus.
But we hope you join us for those 49. And then who knows? But until then, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts and Seats Podcast.
Brr.